shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYN.
Hi, I'm Hans Tenbaum with Valley Forge PC Repair. I offer affordable and expert computer repair services. Deal with a locally owned business who cares more about their clients' needs. The services provided include virus removal, repair, cleanups, tune-ups, tutoring, consulting, and other computer services. Most services can be done at a flat rate. Senior citizens mentioned WFIL receive a 10% discount. Call me at 610-462-3210 for more information.
ShopRite of Hatfield is American-owned, locally operated grocer. We support veterans and seniors by giving 5% discounts. Just bring in your ID. Download the ShopRite mobile app to enjoy weekly savings, coupons, recipes, and so much more. ShopRite of Hatfield, 170 40-foot road, open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
ShopRite, we're all about food, savings, and you.
Good morning, and welcome to The Constitution Matters, We the People, here on 1180 WFYL. My name is Michael Evans, and thank you for joining the program. You could always call in. That's at 610-539-8255. Joining me this morning is Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative in Yorktown, Virginia. We also have Pastor David Whitney, who is Pastor and Senior Instructor at the Institute on the Constitution in Pasadena, Maryland, and we also have joining us Phil Duffy, who's taught at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, if I got that right this time. Thank you, gentlemen, all for joining us on the program today. Gary, in particular to you, you just got back from a teaching that you were doing on the Constitution, correct?
Yes, we had a seminar this Saturday. I taught to 19 people that showed up, and we had a grand time going through the document.
Now, you went through the entire Constitution.
Well, I do, but I don't get there, and I don't even start on the Constitution until I lay the groundwork for it. I think it's important that people understand how we got to the Constitution. So I take them through the independence period, through the Declaration of Independence, because there's a definite link between that document and the Constitution. We walk through the Articles of Confederation and the deficiencies that were built into that, and that makes you understand better than the solutions that the delegates in Philadelphia came up with. If you understand the problems that the Articles presented, then you understand better the solutions and why they were solutions. So I lay all that groundwork before we ever open to the preamble.
Now, you were talking about in particular, and this is something that you've talked about before, Al, you think that Americans are probably more interested in the first episode of season 11 of The Bachelorette, which, by the way, is a complete mess. Not the show isn't a mess. Well, actually, you could probably argue it because I think they have actually two bachelorettes or something, and they're competing. I don't really care, but the point is that you said that more Americans would be interested in that than actually their founding document or the world, their founders' world views.
Well, actually, Michael, I'm embarrassed that you know anything about The Bachelorette, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, thank you for throwing me under that proverbial bus. I appreciate that. That's very kind of you this morning.
The point is, you're absolutely right that most Americans care more about their culture and cultural artifacts and what's on TV than they do about their founding documents, and that's going to lead to our demise as a society, I think, because we really need, as Franklin eloquently expressed after coming out of the convention. We really need to keep this republic. If we don't keep it, it's not going to keep itself. And the keeping comes from the participation of its citizens in the body politic, in the political process.
I guess I walked into that one pretty well.
You did. You did. Full face.
Full face. Yeah, it just hit me right in the front there. So anyway, you could call in if you have comments about The Bachelorette this morning. If you have questions for myself or Gary or Pastor David Whitney or for Phil Duffy, you could call that number again. That's 610-539-TALK, 610-539-8255. Now, you actually put, and we were talking about this last week, Gary, something called the Peers Test, which was actually developed by the Nehemiah Institute, if I have that name correct there. And what it is basically a way to gauge worldviews of different persons. You actually put a founder through that Peers Test. Is that correct?
I did indeed. Well, my hypothetical founder, the Peers Test is the only way I know of analytically measuring what your worldview consists of, how you view the various aspects that make up our world. And so I thought it would be intriguing to construct this hypothetical founder after getting as familiar as I could with their views on politics, on economic issues, on educational issues, on religion, and on social issues, to take this founder then through this Peers Test, theoretically. And I found it was a really intriguing challenge, and the biggest challenge was when it came time to take the test, I found myself facing each question differently as though I were a different founder. That is, it was difficult to come up with the hypothetical generic founder. I wanted to face each question with, well, Thomas Jefferson would answer this way, whereas Benjamin Rush would answer this quite differently, because they were two different men as in terms of many of their views, particularly their religious views.
And you did finish that test, though. And what
did.
What did
yes,
you find as you made this conglomeration?
The hypothetical founder came out with what would be clearly shown to be a theistic, a biblical worldview, well up on the Peers score continuum. Not at the top, because when you get into the Peers test, you find that it's based on a 5-point Likert scale. So you strongly agree or tend to agree or are neutral or tend to disagree or strongly disagree with every statement. So the founders, like human beings everywhere, had nuanced views on certain things, and some of the questions they would tend to agree or tend to disagree and not be strongly in favor or in a disagreement.
Now, why is this so important when we talk about the Constitution, the founding of our nation, and when we talk about what it really means?
Well, because the founders' worldview produced our founding documents. It's that simple. And if you really want to understand our founding documents, you should try to get into the head of the founders and understand the worldview. And like I said, the Peers test is the best way I've found to construct that worldview and to categorize it.
Now, Pastor David, I want to go to you. Now, I thought that the Constitution was a living document. Now, we can make it mean whatever we want it to mean, regardless of what the founders viewed anything.
Well, I'd like to compare it to a contract. If you think of perhaps your mortgage contract, an agreement that's signed with ink and everything's printed out very clearly and plainly, imagine having a living mortgage contract. So this month the interest rate is 5%, but it's a living contract. So next month they want it to be 10% or 15%. They can make it up as they go along. In essence, then, you do not have a contract with your bank, and no one would sign up for a living mortgage contract. So if we wouldn't do that in terms of purchasing our house, why in the world would we do that in terms of purchasing the protection for our God-given rights, which is what we're doing with our Constitution? We're purchasing a protection plan for our God-given rights. And so it makes no sense if you put it in those terms. The only reason people like the living Constitution approach is they get to make up the rules as they go along, and those rulemakers don't wind up being you and I. Those rulemakers wind up being the guys who graduate from law school and who obtain the highest level of power in the judicial system so that they get to wear black robes. They get to make the rules and force those rules upon the rest of us. I think sodomite on marriage, which is the only thing I can call it, is a perfect illustration of that, because now the Supreme Court is poised, and I will not be surprised if they do this, poised to enforce their godless, wicked standard upon the rest of us. Our founders never designed a system of government that would violate the laws of nature and nature's God.
See, no one would be surprised, though. Everyone's expecting it, for the Supreme Court to rule in favor of, as you call, sodomite unmarriage, homosexual marriage, the conventional term, to clarify there, if people didn't pick that up. But, you know, there is something called a living mortgage. It's called an adjustable interest rate, actually, that changes on you every once in a while, whatever your agreement may be. But that aside, though, so, Phil, I want to go to you. What are we seeing then? So if the Constitution can't be a living document, and we have to base this off of the founders' world views and what they wrote, and we obviously don't want a contract to change, then how can we get even more insight, perhaps teachers that the founders themselves looked to?
Well, let me go back to the point about the living document. That's an unfortunate term, I think, because it means two entirely different things to two groups of people. It's been used, I think, by the political left to mean anything goes, as Pastor David has mentioned. Anything goes according to the will of the majority, as is interpreted by the people who are actually in power. You could also say that the Constitution is a living document in the sense that it may be amended according to Article 5, and there are a couple of routes to do that, which we have discussed in the past. And in fact, if you think about it, you can change that Constitution. You can change virtually any aspect of the Constitution with one exception. Whatever you do, you've got to keep the equal number of senators involved in the legislative branch. But other than that, when you think about what is a potential for an amendment, everything is possible. It's just you've got to go through the amendment process, which is it has been determined to be very conservative by intent. We don't want it to be changed for frivolous purposes. So how does that differ from your adjustable mortgage? Well, your adjustable mortgage is not necessarily that living kind of thing that the political left has interpreted the Constitution as, because that provision is built in to the original agreement.
And
so
that
there
was
are differences there.
Oh, sure. And I was using that more as just something funny to point out, because I know that many people are not happy if they have an adjustable mortgage. You know, all of a sudden they'll see their interest rate jump up. It's as if for no apparent reason. But there's something important that I want to touch on what you said there, Phil. You said as far as the laws or the Constitution, looking at it as a living document, it's as interpreted by the people in power. And that's the key. It's as interpreted by the people in power. At the end of the day, Gary, this is just a power grab.
Well, it is, and it has been unfortunately made so. But when you say interpreted by the people in power, that's the facts of the matter, but that's not how it was intended to be. It was intended to be interpreted by the owners of the document, which are the American people. And unfortunately, we've allowed the Supreme Court, five unelected lawyers, in most cases of the nine, determine the decision, but we've allowed them to interpret the document for us, and many people have been quite happy with that, but unfortunately, that gives you the view of five unelected lawyers and not the American people in many cases.
And again, that whole idea of this living document being able to make it whatever we need to, and the guise, the argument for making the Constitution a living document, is that we can address the needs of our culture today, because the needs of the founders and their world are very different from what we need today, because we have evolved, and they won't necessarily be referencing directly evolution, I'm just using that as a term, but we have evolved past those petty quarrels like slavery and different things like that, which, if you look at our world, we clearly have not. That is still prevalent in the world today. We could look at the sex trade and look at modern-day slavery, but let's go back, though, before I digress here. As interpreted by the people in power, this is, again, an excuse to use the Constitution to hijack it as a way to just legislate power, and we've seen that. Now, the founders acquired their views through a number of different authors, and we don't really appreciate how educated our founders were and how high their thought was, and in fact, the fly in the face of we are more advanced than they are today, wouldn't you say?
Well, it would. And then Monday night in my presentation on the founders' worldviews, I went through briefly the interest requirements for college in the colonial period. You would be amazed to find the what was required of an applicant to Harvard or Yale or what is now Princeton. They had to know Latin and Greek grammar. They had to be able to translate books of the Bible from Latin into Greek or vice versa. They had to be able to speak extemporaneously in either language. And this was because those colleges were primarily geared towards turning them into ministers and preparing them for the ministry. That was higher education in colonial America primarily for quite a while until University of Pennsylvania and the University of Virginia came along. So the worldview that produced our documents is what the important thing is, and really we've departed from that worldview because of the way our educational system has trained us as children coming up through that system.
Nit, how have we seen that influence our children, Phil?
Oh, well, our children are completely influenced by the educational process. And what you find is that in the early 19th century, we move away from education being conducted in the private sector to more and more governmental involvement. Today, we have a federal Department of Education that has created something called Common Core requirements. Initially, they're being so-called adopted by the states. That's a questionable concept right there. But basically, it's the federal government telling us what our students are to know. Can we be surprised that they would be ignorant of all of the things that Gary has talked about, the founding documents, the worldview of the founders of this nation? It's no surprise whatsoever.
Now, Phil, you are in the collegiate atmosphere, so you probably see this more than most, where you're dealing when you're talking and teaching at the Constitution. And again, it's the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. It is Osher, not Osher, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, I want to make sure I was saying that right. But you'd probably deal with this more than most because you teach there on the Constitution. You're dealing with the worldviews that have been put on our children, although they're not children by the time you get to them. They're adults, and they're thinking, and they have their own worldviews and philosophies.
Oh, absolutely. Much of what we discuss in those sessions is a complete surprise to many of these people. The whole concept of a democracy versus a republic is a surprise to most of the students in my classes.
Which is amazing. I want to go to you, Pastor David, that they would be completely, I guess the word I could use is dumbfounded at this discussion of a democracy versus a republic. I'm guessing what you're getting at there Phil, was the differences between the two and them not knowing that.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
that's amazing
correct.
That we don't even know those basic levels of government, Pastor David.
Yes, and, you know, our founders had nothing good to say about a democracy, which, again, is astounding when people hear quotes like, a democracy is a volcano which conceals the fiery materials of its own destruction. These will produce an eruption and carry desolation in their way. Or Fisher Ames says, the known propensity of a democracy is to licentiousness, that is, violations of God's law, licentiousness which the ambitious call and the ignorant believe to be liberty. Indeed, that's what many people today think. Oh, real liberty is just being able to do whatever I want. Now, our founder said that is anarchy, because if everyone does whatever they want, you have the riots in Baltimore and Ferguson. That's everybody doing whatever they please, not obeying the laws of nature and nature's God.
Well, then aren't we just trying to control the people? I mean, who would want to live under that, even if it was the founder's worldview?
Well, if the only security that is for our life, our liberty, our property, is to live in a system of law where the laws of nature and nature's God are what are enforced so that your property rights are protected, your right to liberty is protected, your right not to be defamed or slandered. So if your God-given rights are not protected by a civil government, that civil government does not exist for your well-being. And indeed, it's probably an enemy of your property rights, an enemy of your liberty, indeed an enemy even of your life.
Now, we could learn a great deal from the founders' philosophy and everything they talk about from documents they produced, Gary. And you actually found in your teaching that there was a few that stood out to you.
Well, I mentioned Monday night that there are four documents that I think are worthy of study because the Congress of the United States has deemed them to be our organic law. They have raised them to that level and made them official organic law of the United States in our U.S. Code. If you go to the first volume of any U.S. Code in a law library, you're going to find that in what's called the front matter, there are four documents that have been designated as our organic law, and they are the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, and the Constitution. The Constitution is part of our organic law, or rather I should say, the Declaration of Independence is part of our organic law the same way the Constitution is. And the Supreme Court has even recognized the connection between the two, calling the Declaration the spirit of our laws, while the Constitution is the body of the law. So they need to be studied together, and that's why I try to take pains to explain the Declaration of Independence and go through the Articles of Confederation before we even study the Constitution.
And just here's an example, the Declaration of Independence. I mean, and just looking in the beginning of that document, you could come to some conclusions.
Absolutely. You come to some very dramatic conclusions. The founders believed that there was a creator God. They understood this, and they all prayed, they all looked for guidance and providence from this God, and they understood that our rights come from this God, and they are unalienable rights. You can find these statements in the first couple paragraphs of the Declaration. The purpose of government is simply to secure those rights, that the people are the source of the government's legitimate, or as Jefferson called it, its just powers, and that the people reserve the right to replace or alter their government when it doesn't serve their purposes any longer. So these are principles that underlie our whole system of government. Yet we ignore them because we say that, well, the Declaration, that was 11 years before the Constitution. That was overcome by the Constitution. We only need to worry about the Constitution.
Well, we've got to head to a break, but we can look at the Constitution and find some interesting points as well. Remember, you could call in if you have a question for either myself, Dave, Gary, or Phil. That's 610-539-TALK, 610-539-8255. But on the other side of this break, we're going to talk about what can we see in the Constitution that we see in the Declaration in order to understand it more. ¶¶
shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station, WFYL.
Hi, I'm Hans Tenbaum with Valley Forge PC Repair. I offer affordable and expert computer repair services. Deal with a locally owned business who cares more about their clients' needs. The services provided include virus removal, repair, cleanups, tune-ups, tutoring, consulting, and other computer services. Most services can be done at a flat rate. Senior citizens mentioned WFIL receive a 10% discount. Call me at 610-462-3210 for more information.
ShopRite of Hatfield is American-owned, locally operated grocer. We support veterans and seniors by giving 5% discounts. Just bring in your ID. Download the ShopRite mobile app to enjoy weekly savings, coupons, recipes, and so much more. ShopRite of Hatfield, 170 40-foot road, open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
ShopRite, we're all about food, savings, and you.
Hey, Grandma, can you help me with my Common Core lesson on the Constitution? But the only part we're reading in 8th grade is the preamble and the First Amendment. I wonder when we'll get to study the rest of it. Didn't you say our founding fathers were wise patriots and wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to protect our freedom? This Common Core book we're reading says our founding fathers were racist and they didn't think women or blacks should ever be allowed to vote. She says, we the people, didn't really mean you and me, but some rich white guys. That just makes me feel terrible about our country. We need to change things.
Oh, honey, that's not true at all. Our country is the greatest country the world has ever seen, and our founding fathers worked hard to be fair to everyone. I'm going to call our school board and our state board of education and ask why they allow Common Core and this book in your school.
Call your representatives now and ask them to stop Common Core and restore local control. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message. Go to nopacommoncore.com or call 484-678-2236.
The Apostle Paul wrote in Ephesians 6:10 to be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might so we can stand in the evil day. Let me ask you, are you standing strong in the Lord and in the power of His might? Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network and the American Pastors Network, agreeing with the Apostle Paul that when the days are evil, we need God's armor. To modern culture, right is wrong and wrong is right. Good is evil and evil is good. The war against God, the truth, and God's people was started by the devil and is in full swing. The Bible tells us that all who will live godly in Christ Jesus will be targeted and will suffer persecution in the spiritual war. So what must we do? Put on the whole armor of God. Imagine, God designed armor to help us in the spiritual battle and available to us. In the next few weeks, we'll look at this armor of God and what it's for and why we'd better put it on. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, asking you, did you put on God's armor today? Are you even in the battle?
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
Welcome back to We the People, the Constitution Matters, here on 1180 WFYL. Mike Levins here, along with Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative in Yorktown, Virginia. We also have Pastor David Whitney, who is Pastor and Senior Instructor at the Institute on the Constitution in Pasadena, Maryland. And we also have Phil Duffy, who is a teacher at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute on the Constitution, all joining us. Gentlemen, again, welcome to the program. If you want to call in with a question for any of us, you could, again, call that number, 610-539-TALK, 610-539-8255. Now, we were just talking about, before we went to the break, how we can pull in the Declaration of Independence immediate principles that our founders believed in. And again, this is a founding document. And we were just talking about some of those principles. There is a Creator God. Our rights come from Him. They're unalienable. The purpose of government is simply to secure those rights. The people are the source of our government's legitimate power, and those people reserve a right to alter or replace their own government. Now, we could see similar things in the Constitution, Gary, can't we?
Well, we do. We see those same concepts embedded in the Constitution, but we could encapsulate those five principles as comprising the American view of law and government. And they are so critical, I think, to understanding the period documents or colonial documents that we really ought to have that as the core of our instruction in our schools. Unfortunately, we don't, because there's that very first statement that there's a creator God that our public schools have a problem with. But the American view of law and government is so critical and so important that what used to be known as the Institute on the Constitution basically renamed itself the American View. And David Whitney is part of that organization. I'd like him to express his opinion about how important this view is to understanding those important documents.
Oh, thank you, Gary, because when we don't have our founders' worldview, we don't come with the same type of government from that. In other words, today, people view the Supreme Court as basically the deities that determine what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's evil, what's just and what's unjust, what's righteous and what's unrighteous. And like we were talking about earlier, if they go ahead and say sodomite on marriage is what is good, then anybody like myself who opposes it is going to be persecuted for our beliefs. And that's already taken place with florists and bakers and so on. One baker being fined $135,000 for simply refusing to participate in the sodomite on marriage ceremony. So if there is no standard higher than a set of human beings, in this case people who've graduated from law school that happen to wear black robes, if they are the highest standard, then they are the god of that culture. Our founder said, we don't want any human being in that powerful position. We want the God of the universe, the one who created the whole thing. We want him and his law to be the one that controls what a just government is. So it makes a huge difference if you do not have a concept that there is a creator God who is above all human beings, and his law must be obeyed by all human beings. So his law says, thou shalt not steal. That means the government can't steal, and the individual can't steal, the family can't steal. Nobody is permitted to steal, to unjustly take the property of another person. Thou shalt not murder is another one of his commands, and no human beings, including those wearing black robes, get to change that law. Yet in 1973, we saw our Supreme Court doing exactly that. They say, well, thou shalt not murder only applies if you happen to live outside of a mother's womb. If you're inside, sorry, we can murder you at will, anytime, any way we choose to do so.
They're surprising.
Our founders knew it wasn't safe to have a government that did not have God and his law as the supreme law of the universe.
And Pastor David, there's a surprising correlation, and you know this as being a pastor as well as I, between abortion and the worship of a god, an ancient god called Molech, where there is child sacrifice involved. What people would do, literally, in order to guarantee fertility and prosperity. Because let's think about a child, just talking about abortion real quickly. Think about a child. There's cost associated with that child. You're going to have to pay for food. You're going to have to pay for clothes. You're going to have to give up your time. You're going to have to give up sleep, which may actually translate even into income loss somewhat at a job, whether you have to take off. A child's a costly idea. But if you were to sacrifice that child, what would happen is with the god Molech, people would take their newborn babies and there would be this statue of the god. It would be heated till it was red hot. It was metal. And they would literally put their infants in the arms of this metal god while it was searing hot. That would be how they would sacrifice their children. And that was to guarantee fertility and prosperity. And you kind of think about abortion in the same way. Children can be a very costly endeavor. And that's a roundabout way. There's an interesting correlation between the two. Now, that's a digression, but that's why whenever we talk about the Constitution and in politics, in American politics today specifically, it is so important. We need to understand our Constitution. It comes up especially with everything this president has been doing, Phil, and the more that we can understand about our Constitution, it's brought up so much in the discourse of American politics, well, then we could actually understand what we were supposed to be doing, what our founders wanted us to be doing with it.
Yeah, we've talked about, I think Gary had mentioned in his original email that there are five concepts that come out of the Declaration of Independence, that the first being that there is a creator God, and I think that's probably the primary foundation upon which the other four are built, that our rights come from him and are unalienable, that the purpose of government is simply to secure those rights. People are the source of government's legitimate power, and so forth. And, you know, all of that is true. But I'd like to make the point here, because we were talking about economics, that believing that there is a creator God is not the basis for American exceptionalism, that even the founders of Islamic republics believe that there is a creator God. It's the other things that are built on that concept that make us exceptional. Rodney Stark has written a remarkable book called The Victory of Reason, and it suggests that there's another dimension to the role that faith has played in the founding of our nation and in Western culture, if you will. And we get a sense for Stark's argument in the subtitle, How Christianity Led to Freedom, Capitalism, and Western Success. And here are a couple of excerpts from The Victory of Reason that will give you a sense for Stark's argument. While other world religions emphasize mystery and intuition, Christianity alone embraced reason and logic as the primary guide to religious truth. He also said, it is said that the West surged ahead precisely as it overcame religious barriers to progress, especially those impeding science. And he says, that's nonsense. The success of the West, including the rise of science, rested entirely on religious foundations, and the people who brought it about were devout Christians.
And that is going to shock many people listening, because they would think that Christianity by its nature, at least according to how it's talked about in our culture today, was naturally antagonistic to science.
And that's not true. For example, he goes on with one last point here. Real science arose only once, in Europe. China, Islam, India, and ancient Greece each had a highly developed alchemy, but only in Europe did alchemy develop into chemistry. By the same token, many societies developed elaborate systems of astrology, but only in Europe did astrology lead to astronomy. Now, my point is that when we talk about the role that faith has played in the founding of this nation, we are not excluding the significant role that both economics and reason have played. And these are not mutually exclusive realms. To the contrary, they're symbiotic. They draw strength from each other.
Now, if you would like to call in again with any questions you may have about the Constitution, that number is 610-539-TALK. 610-539-TALK, 8255, the last four digits there. So if we look at our government today, we have to wonder, are we keeping it? Are we keeping it the way that the founders intended us to keep it? And if not, or if so, what's our course of action now, Gary?
Well, I don't think we are keeping it very well. And I think we can see signs of unraveling on the fringes. Unfortunately, government has now become kind of its own animal. And government is going to protect itself. It's going to protect its own existence. And so when the people start rising up and demanding change in the government, there might even be a tendency for government to say, well, the heck with you guys, we're going to protect this government at all costs, and that means we're going to round up the dissidents and take them to camps, and we're going to fire on our citizens if we need to protect the government, because the government is now this is no longer we the people. It has become its own entity, and it's going to come into self-protection mode, I'm afraid.
Now, there's an interesting video that actually I got connected with through you, Gary, and I would like to play that before we continue our conversation. because it has something interesting to say as far as religion, Christianity in particular, with our American government. So if you would just stand by, we'll go ahead and play this video for you right now.
Some time ago, I had a conversation with a Marxist economist from China. He was coming to the end of a Fulbright fellowship here in Boston. And I asked him if he had learned anything that was surprising or unexpected. And without any hesitation, he said, yeah. I had no idea how critical religion is to the functioning of democracy. The reason why democracy works, he said, is not because the government was designed to oversee what everybody does, but rather democracy works because most people, most of the time, voluntarily choose to obey the law. And in your past, most Americans attended a church or a synagogue every week, and they were taught there by people who they respected. My friend went on to say that Americans followed these rules because they had come to believe that they weren't just accountable to society, they were accountable to God. My Chinese friend heightened a vague but nagging concern I've harbored inside that as religion loses its influence over the lives of Americans, what will happen to our democracy? Where are the institutions that are going to teach the next generation of Americans that they too need to voluntarily choose to obey the laws? Because if you take away religion, you can't hire enough police.
Now, that's an interesting thought. Now, that was actually who you heard talking there. And it is a video, which you could probably find on YouTube the name is Clay Christensen on religious freedom, but Clay Christensen is a professor at Harvard Business School, and that's who you are hearing talking there. And I think he puts forward some interesting ideas from his friend, who he claims is a communist, was a Marxist economist, which seems to be a contradiction to me, a Marxist economist.
No, it's no contradiction.
I know, and that's amazing that something like that would exist. I guess you can have somewhat of an economy in a Marxist society, but he put forward some interesting ideas, though, from his friend, and some insights from an outsider.
Well, the central premise of the video is the importance of Christian self-government, and we neglect how important self-government is. Even the great constitutional scholar Eleanor Roosevelt recognized that our system is based on self-government, and if people are not willing to govern themselves, then it's not going to work. And that's the premise of that video. And the idea of that he brought up of people need to obey the laws not because government is watching them, but because God is watching them is the central thrust of what we find in the Declaration. There is a God, and he expects us to use right behavior and to follow his precepts. So we neglect that at our peril. And now I do want to make one point, though. He uses the word democracy in that video quite liberally, if you will.
And, I knew you would take issue with that the minute I heard it.
Because as soon as I sent a link to that video out, some of my readers challenged me on it. The most expansive definition of the word democracy is that people governing themselves. And that is exactly what we have in that sense. The American people are governing themselves. Now, we don't have a democracy in structure. We don't have a democracy in the sense that some people take that term, in that the will of the majority prevails no matter what. That is not our democracy. But if you take democracy in its most expansive sense, the people governing themselves, then that's entirely what we have.
And we see in our society, we see so many people having blatant disregard for the law, whether it's in Baltimore, whether it's our own president, or whether it's elected officials. Everyone, from the criminal to the governmental leader, seems to have a blatant disregard for what is on the books, for any kind of law in our country. And, Pastor, I want to get your reaction, because naturally, with the tenor of the video, you would be the one who I would be most interested to hear from.
Oh, he is spot on, other than, you know, his mention of democracy, but he is spot on that our founders constructed a system of government where self-government was absolutely critical, that people obeyed God's law, and then, therefore, they were going to obey the laws put down by the government because they were obedient to God. I think one of the important ways in which our crumbling has taken place is we, as you've already mentioned, we've elected people to the White House, and we've elected people to Congress, and elected people in state government and in county government who do not fear God. Exodus 18:20 tells us the fear of God is absolutely essential in anyone you're going to give power to in a civil body politic. We've elected people who don't fear God, and therefore they don't worry about what's going to happen after they die on Judgment Day. And if they don't fear God, why should we trust them with any power whatsoever? We know they're going to lie, cheat, steal, and murder if they can get away with it. Their only standard is, how much evil can they get away with before people catch up to them, because they don't fear that God's going to judge them on Judgment Day. They only fear what the voters might do at the polls. So we have elected a whole godless rank of people throughout our system that obviously they take an oath, but their oath doesn't mean anything. You know, they swear an oath that they're going to uphold the Constitution, so help me God, within minutes. And this happened here in the state of Maryland. We just elected a Republican governor. Many people rejoiced. 18 hours after he was elected, he began violating his oath of office to the Maryland state Constitution, and we confronted him on it. He's not repentant. He has no desire to follow the law. He only desires to get away with as much violations as he can possibly get away with. Well, on Judgment Day, he's going to have to answer for the oath that he took before Almighty God.
And, you know, to bring up on the national level another instance of something similar. She hasn't been elected to office yet, but I'm going to bring up the political pinata that is Hillary Clinton. Apparently, the Clinton Foundation has revealed that about $26.4 million were in previously undisclosed payments. So that was monies in payments to the Clinton Foundation that has gone undisclosed until recently. And she's come under political heat for many different things. That's why she's a political pinata. But are we seeing, because she's running for office, she wants to be a government official, but there are things that we would look at in her life and go, that doesn't seem to be quite right.
Now, the character of a person needs to be examined first and foremost, and that's unfortunately what people of America seem to do last, if at all. And we got to get around that. We got to correct that in ourselves. We need to examine in depth the character of a person who wants our vote for public office. There really is no way around that. We've got to do that if we expect good government.
Well, we have to, because if they don't have good character, and Pastor David, you were bringing this up, kind of leading to it in your arguments, that if a person doesn't have good character, if they're not accountable to God, and that would be looking at their character, even their heart, then how are we going to expect them to be good leaders? How are we going to expect them to be able to lead? And you know, you may even be able to look at the founder's view. Phil, I want to go to you. You may even be able to go to the founder's view, and I'm sure that they believe the same thing as far as the importance of character in political leadership.
But they also believed in education, understanding the form of government, understanding the restraints that it put on government officials. Education was key in their mind. They were educated people. They were very, very well informed people. So it's education that makes the difference. If the officials have arrived at a culture, a political culture, in which it is understood that everybody violates the Constitution once they're in political office, and the people do nothing about it, then that behavior will not only continue, it will magnify in the future. So it is a matter of focusing attention on education. because it's only through education, I believe, that we will correct this problem.
And education goes into the founders' worldview. What we're doing today, looking at historical worldviews of the founders of this nation, one of which are their political views as they were touching religion, to use a phrase that you used, Gary. And actually I want to point at, as far as a cultural reference for how religion is, at least the atmosphere of religion and Christianity in particular is being handled today, apparently there was a reprimand that was demanded of an Air Force general officer because he had the, quote, temerity to express his faith while in uniform at a National Day of Prayer Task Force event, which is a private event, but an anti-Christian fringe group demanded he be reprimanded.
Well, unfortunately, that's true. And we've got these fringe groups that are just bent on suppressing religion and from every aspect of the public square. And so to their world, you would never have public prayer. You would never have public expressions of faith. I think they would rather churches go away, for that matter. So there's these fringe groups who unfortunately have found a way to express their opinion, and certainly they're entitled to their opinion, but to reprimand an Air Force general for expressing his faith in God is absolutely ridiculous and should be dismissed out of hand.
Well, it's almost to say, if you work for the government, do you have to automatically then reject God? Because then we're getting into something, if we look at history, the Romans, we're looking at either worship Caesar or worship God, but you have to choose between one or the other.
Well, we're going to spend a session here in the next few weeks talking about the founders' view of religion, because we're going to walk through each of the five categories of the Peirce construct: political, economic, educational, religious, and social. So we'll get to that. We'll touch on each one of those in the weeks ahead. And I would encourage our readers, our listeners, to come back and hear what the founders' views on economics were, how they viewed education. We've touched on that a little bit. We'll go into great depth about what their views on religion were. And finally, there's a great host of social issues that we face today. How did the founders view those same social issues? Because they faced them as well as we did. There's nothing new under the sun, as the Bible says.
I would be so bold to put forward that instead of watching season 11 of The Bachelorette, you should tune into our program next week at the same time. That's going to be from 7 to 8. I had to do that. I had to reference it one more time before we closed out the program because we are reaching the end. Gentlemen, it's always wonderful to have you on as part of our show, and thank you for listening. You've been listening to We the People, The Constitution Matters, everything you need to know about the Constitution and how it applies to our society today and how important it is. We will see you next week as we continue the conversation on the Constitution. I'm Michael Levins. We've also had Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative in Yorktown, David Whitney, Senior Instructor at the Institute on the Constitution, and Phil Duffy, who's a teacher at the Osher Lifelong Institute, saying we'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Hans Tenbaum with Valley Forge PC Repair. I offer affordable and expert computer repair services. Deal with a locally owned business who cares more about their clients' needs. The services provided include virus removal, repair, cleanups, tune-ups, tutoring, consulting, and other computer services. Most services can be done at a flat rate. Senior citizens mentioned WFIL receive a 10% discount. Call me at 610-462-3210 for more information.
ShopRite of Hatfield is American-owned, locally operated grocer. We support veterans and seniors by giving 5% discounts. Just bring in your ID. Download the ShopRite mobile app to enjoy weekly savings, coupons, recipes, and so much more. ShopRite of Hatfield, 170 40-foot road, open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
ShopRite, we're all about food, savings, and you.
You're listening to WFYL 1180, working for your liberty and things that matter. Thanks for listening.